number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Quick and Loan studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. Nighttime is the right time.
You're on the nighttime now.
It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Well, the New England Patriots could have Tom Brady around until he's 42 years old. And I say maybe because the big factor in all this is whether or not Father Time is going to decide to hit Tom Brady with something inexplicably, and that causes him to just be all of a sudden an ineffective quarterback. I mean, it happened to Peyton Manning. Never forget, the 2013 season was record-breaking for Peyton Manning. I remember that year going over in my head how a 37-year-old guy was putting up those kind of numbers in the National Football League. And Tom Brady, who does not look like he's slowing down an inch, yeah, had a very good 2015. It didn't lead to a Super Bowl, but still, the numbers were just great for a guy that is pushing 40. Now is getting a two-year contract extension with the Patriots that could put him with the team until he's 42. Now, naturally, the question, when you get those kind of numbers and when you get that kind of scenario, the natural feeling is, well, can Tom Brady actually play when he's 42? This is not where the Patriots are going with this. I don't think they're worried about whether or not Brady plays until he's 42. What they want to make sure of is that they're locking in the guy as long as they can, reasonably, in case he does, in case he can. But is this really when we look at the Tom Brady situation in New England, I don't want to ever get to a point where I'm starting to anticipate whether or not a guy can play at 42 based on how he played at 37, 38, 39. Because old age in sports comes at you quick, and it comes at you hard, and you never know when it's going to pop up. It happened to Derek Jeter. It happened to Kobe Bryant. Injuries pile up, and the next thing you know, you're just not the same, and you don't recover quickly. But this is going to be, if he can play until he's 42 and be effective at 42, just for the sake of argument, it'll be really one amazing thing to watch, because we'll all be waiting for some sort of ticking time bomb, no pun intended, to go off with Brady. And all of a sudden, to just see one of the best quarterbacks of all time lose everything, lose his skill. I never thought we'd see it with Peyton Manning. I never thought we really would. I mean, if you had told me 2 years ago when Manning was putting up those records that he would win a Super Bowl 2 years later, I would have just assumed he would have been just as effective as he was in 2013. Maybe slightly less, but still effective. Maybe with a better defense, but still be a very, very good quarterback. But instead, he was lousy, lost his job, came back, was average, and yet a defense rode him to a Super Bowl championship. But the underlying question with the Tom Brady contract extension isn't the surprise of getting one. Of course he's going to get one. The Patriots are going to give him deals until he really can't play anymore. And until that day comes, he'll be a Patriot. If that's 45, that'll be 40. Yeah, that's fine. But what do the New England Patriots do with Jimmy Garoppolo? Where do they go now? Because they drafted Jimmy Garoppolo in 2014. Knowing that, you know, hey, look, Brady is going into the twilight of his career. We never know when, again, Father Time strikes. Garoppolo could take over the team in a year, two, three. But now you've given Tom Brady this extension till he's 42. Does Garoppolo have to just sit around and wait for it? He's signed through 2017. But think about this. If Brady completes this contract, Garoppolo will not be the starting quarterback of the New England Patriots until his seventh year in the NFL. And we thought Aaron Rodgers had it bad, waiting for Brett Favre to leave. So if I'm the New England Patriots, do I take Jimmy Garoppolo and try to get some serious trade value for him? Do I put him on the market? Because let's be honest, they don't really want to be in a position to use him. They're hoping they never have to use him, and that's not why they drafted him. With the injury bug being able to strike at any time, it's good to have a solid backup. But when you draft a guy in the second round, eventually you want to give him the starting job. You're not drafting a backup there. Backups you can get anywhere. They're all over the place. They're a dime a dozen. I mean, my God, somebody's always out of a work in the NFL. That's not what the Patriots were looking for. The Patriots are looking for the heir apparent. But the problem is, when is the heir apparent supposed to take over? And like I said earlier, the big question mark is, when will the injury bug hit Brady to a point where he's not effective anymore? When will the injury bug hit Brady that it just takes so long to come back, it's very, very difficult to see the same player? Because that's what happened with Manning. Everything was going okay for 2015. 2014. Manning was doing all right. Broncos were winning games. Then all of a sudden in the St. Louis game of that 2014 season, he started handing the ball off and the Broncos lost. And there was a buzz that he was hurt. And then he looked hurt. Then he was really, really looked hurt. And then we found out at the end of the season he was hurt. He never recovered that season. Y'all remember the game against the Indianapolis Colts in the playoffs where he had the first down right there, right in front of him, and he rather, instead of diving for the running towards the sticks with an open field, he ran out of bounds. Peyton Manning struggled with injuries to a point that 2015 was a mess. And it came, and it came quickly. The Patriots know that that could happen to Tom Brady at any time. But at the same time, they've got a quarterback that is on their roster that, again, they drafted in the second round, who they have signed through 2017, who in all likelihood will not see the starting lineup for the New England Patriots, barring injury to Tom Brady. But it will not be his team until Brady turns 42, if the contract were to come to fruition. I don't know if it will. It's good security. So, I don't know. Should Jimmy Garoppolo be traded? That's the question I want to know with this new deal for Tom Brady. 800-777-2907, the number to join us tonight. We're going to talk about the NBA. We're going to talk to NCAA basketball with Shelby Mast from BracketWag.com. That's coming up. We've got a little bit more NFL news for you from the Combine. Benjamin Albright's going to join us in the next hour. I do want to get to Steph Curry and the Golden State Warriors, because it seems like every day there's a new bit of news on this team, a new bit of analysis on this team. There is this conversation now about what should the NBA do with the three-point line? Should they move it? I'm like, why panic? What's the panic for? Because Steph Curry is raining them down? You want to start moving the three-point line back? How much back could you possibly move it, by the way? This is similar to golf, when Tiger Woods was annihilating courses. And what golf tried to do, you probably heard the term, they were tiger-proofing golf courses. And they were making them longer. And I think it was Nicklaus, who said, you want to tiger-proof a golf course? Make them shorter. You got to put more people in play. You make them longer, you take more people out. You make the courses more tough. And it takes a lot of the field out. There's a lot of long hitters on the PGA Tour, but there are also a lot of short hitters on the PGA Tour. Not everybody bombs at 320. Not everybody bombs at 305. And Nicklaus's point was, you're going to take out half the field. And when you do that, you set up Tiger perfectly. He can beat you no matter how you set the course. So put everybody in play. If the NBA were to move the three-point line, Steph Curry would have his shots. Steph Curry would still make a whole bunch of threes. He can already knock them down from 35 feet, for crying out loud. This is not an answer. Because what you would do, just like what golf learned when it tiger-proofed courses, was you take out half the field when you make them longer. If the goal is to make it tougher for Tiger to win everything, you take out half the field. In this case, if you move the three-point line back, you take out three-point shooters. A lot of three-point shooters who can't hit it from back there, but can hit it where the line is occasionally. Are you really going to contemplate a rule change or a design change to accommodate one person who's wreaking havoc with the whole league? We'll talk more about that next. Does this make sense to people? 800-777-2907. Would you like to see the three-point line moved back to a point where only Steph Curry and a handful of guys could hit threes? Is the three-point shot so bad and changing the game so much that this should even be considered? We'll talk about that next. It's Tony D, Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
All right, look, the NBA has been prone to change. It added the three-point line, right? It changes the rules. It adjusts for competition. We've talked about this a number of times. It's hard to compare eras in basketball. It's hard to compare players in basketball because the rule changes have adjusted so much the way the game is played that it's really hard to get an idea of how good players are based on eras. For example, you know, people watch Pete Maravich play in college, and he has the scoring mark and all of this, you know, all of that stuff. But you can't compare somebody today to Pete Maravich. Maravich didn't have the 3-point line in college basketball. So basketball has changed. It does evolve. You want to add a little twist here or there. You need to put a shot clock in, put a shot clock in. You want to adjust that shot clock? You can. You want to adjust the way defense is played? You adjust that. The physicality? You adjust that. The one thing that basketball has never changed is the 10-foot basket. I've heard my whole life, now that players are actually, you know, bigger than they used to be back when James Naismith invented the game, that it's time to move the basket up to 15 feet. But the reality of it is, they've never changed it. 10 feet is where he nailed in the peach basket. 10 feet is where it stays. Everything else has changed. So the idea of moving the three-point line back, the conversation that people are having because of the assault that Steph Curry is putting on the three-point line is a legit conversation because this is something the NBA can do. It didn't like the way the draft went, so it made it a lottery. They didn't like the way the lottery went, so they changed it to ping pong balls. They didn't necessarily like that process, so they made it even more complex. The NBA will adjust and has adjusted to many, 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 many things. And will continue to do so. There'll be a time if you have kids, when your kids are young adults, there'll be a basketball player in the NBA that will do some amazing things. And I guarantee you, you will have a hard time comparing that player to LeBron or Steph Curry in this era. Because the era will have changed. Something about basketball 20 years from now will make it hard to compare those players to what Steph Curry is doing today. Maybe it is because the three-point line is moved back. I don't know. But the physicality of the game is enough that when Adam and I were talking about whether or not this Golden State team, for example, could have beaten, you know, the 96 Bulls, physicality of the game is a major factor in determining which team is better. The Bulls played a more physical brand of basketball. If they were allowed to play that more physical brand of basketball, I don't think Golden State would beat them. So the NBA would consider this if it was a problem. The NBA would come up with a new line. And believe me, they'd have to, because the lines on the side, there's no other place you can go on the side of the court to knock down 3 points. You can barely fit feet between the end line and the three-point line. So you're going to have to extend it out. It's going to look weird if they did it. But should they do it? That's my question. 800-777-2907. I don't think they should, because I don't think this is an answer to what Steph Curry is doing to the league. And I don't think what Steph Curry is doing to the league is all that bad that you have to make this adjustment. I don't think you have to go out there and make this kind of drastic move because you don't like the way the game is looking. And what I mean by that is they don't like the way people who are making the claim that this should be done are not liking the way the NBA is being played at this current pace. Everybody's knocking down threes. Well, Steph Curry is knocking down threes. And if you move the three-point line back, Steph Curry and a handful of other players are going to be the only ones knocking down threes. And let me tell you right now, when you take half of the teams out of the league and they're three-point shooters because they can barely knock them down now and there's no way they're going to move them back, there's no way they're going to be knocking them back if you move it back 2 feet or a foot and a half or whatever it is you want to move it back, then that means Golden State has a huge advantage every night. They already do. Just up that up a little bit by moving that line. I have no problems with the NBA making adjustments. I like the evolution of sports. I don't think it should be stuck in stone. I've yelled at Major League Baseball for that for years with the instant replay. Do something with it. You don't have to do balls and strikes, but do something with it. Make it a part of something. I don't necessarily have to have the game look like it was in the 1920s. Right, I don't need guys in hats and peanuts and Cracker Jacks and everything that's good about the grand old game of baseball. I don't need that. I don't need to go to my NFL games and see leather helmets and everybody just running to the middle of the line. And every now and then that fancy forward pass will be introduced to the game sometime in the third quarter. I don't need it. I want evolution. I want the game to progress. I want the game to look better. I want commissioners of every single league to sit down with their games and decide at the time how we can enhance it based on the size and strength of the players coming in, the speed and how fast guys are today compared to guys in the past. It's okay. But in this case, the assault on the three-point line that Steph Curry is doing and changing the way the game looks, I'm telling you, you will not fix the Steph Curry problem by moving the line back. You will just create a problem for the other teams that are trying to stay competitive with what Golden State is doing. And isn't something that we've learned in sports over the years that in the end, these are really ebbs and flows? Look, Golden State is annihilating teams. And it is, I think it's fun to watch. I don't root for this team to lose. I'm not a hater on Steph Curry. Heck, he can win five MVPs in a row. I don't care. I like watching him play, and I think he's good for the league. But we know that that kind of dominance doesn't usually last. There are smart guys in this league. There are guys who are going to be able to find ways to knock Golden State down a little bit. You just may not see it this year. Heck, you may not see it next year. But you know that this stuff happens. We were so petrified of the Miami Heat. Remember? It's one of the reasons the decision was so bad. We didn't like how LeBron James did it. We didn't like what it meant for the league. We didn't like how it was orchestrated. We didn't want to see Miami just take title after title after title after title. And when those guys sat around and said, not one, not two, not three, and they were talking about multiple championships, most of us believed them because we looked at the league and said, what are you going to do, NBA? Well, guess what? People did. People did rise up and play better. The Miami Heat won two NBA championships, and one of those, they were a Ray Allen shot away from not winning that NBA Finals. This thing comes in ebbs and flows. Let's not panic, Adam Silver, and let's not listen to the people who think that the game is all of a sudden tarnished because Steph Curry is knocking them down from all over the place. Because I'm telling you right now, there is nothing you can do to prevent that. You move it back, he'll just be the only three-point shooter that you'll know. Because anybody else that can knock him down now will not consistently be able to do it like Steph Curry. So if you want to put him on a pedestal, if you want to make Steph Curry the centerpiece of NBA offenses and NBA scoring, go ahead and move that line back. But just like golf found out when you Tiger-proof courses that you eliminate so many golfers that Tiger has an easier time winning tournaments than he already needed to, Steph Curry will have no problem still being the three-point champion by knocking him down from 30 feet every single night when everybody else can't. I don't want to see that. Leave it where it is, and let's just enjoy the ride. Yahoo Sports Radio. We'll talk NCAA next.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
It's Tony D here on the Nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio, and as we continue to look ahead to the college basketball Selection Sunday, let's get an idea of where the brackets are sitting right now. Shelby Mast joins us from BracketWag.com, gives us his take on where the brackets are heading as we look ahead to the Selection Sunday. How are you, Shelby?
I'm good, Tony. How are you?
All right, a lot of moving and shaking going on in college basketball. It seems like that every single week. As of right now, the top four seeds for you are?
Number one, Kansas. Second one seed, Villanova. Third one seed, Virginia. Fourth one seed, Oklahoma.
All right, let me ask you about Xavier. They lost an opportunity to hold one of those number one seeds, losing to Seton Hall. When you look at the Musketeers, is that still a team that can vie for that one spot?
Yeah, they can, I think. They're a definite Final Four contender. They lost to Seton Hall yesterday, who's playing better, and for me, locked themselves in the bracket, but it was still a loss. Pretty good deficit they needed to drop for that one.
We were talking about the Big 12 show, and I'm wondering if it's a seven-team tournament conference. Do you see it as a seven-team tournament conference?
Possibly eight if somebody from the bottom three wins the title. I don't expect that to happen. They'll get seven at least. Texas Tech has got a very nice profile, and they're the seventh team in.
When you were putting your brackets together for this week, was there a real big movement that you noticed where you went, wow, that team has really fallen or risen rather rapidly?
Fallen for me has been Providence. They've kind of gone in the toilet, so to speak. They have not played well. They're piling up losses. They looked earlier this season like they were going to be a top four seed, and now I have them as a 10 seed, and I feel they might should be a little bit lower than that even.
I want to ask you about Syracuse. Where do you see the Orange? I mean, they spent a couple of games without Jim Boeheim, losing those games. They're a bubble team, but how much of a bubble team are they?
Yeah, I think they're squarely on the bubble. They lost to North Carolina tonight. They played close. It was a good game, and they showed well. So that's good, but they do have a bunch of losses. The nine games without Jim Boeheim, the committee's not just going to wipe those out as if they didn't happen, but they'll kind of give them special consideration on them. Maybe, they lost four of them, I think. Maybe the committee will say, well, let's just say it was two. I don't know how each committee member is going to look at that. I think they'll be in, but they don't need to lose any more games.
All right, the SEC, how do you see that conference? It's starting to be, there's a lot of attrition going on in the SEC. Where does it stand today as far as getting teams in?
Well, Kentucky, Texas A&M are set. Those teams are in. South Carolina and Florida have been falling. I think they'll still be in. Florida, yesterday, were in my first four games, and they've moved out today because Michigan fell there. Vanderbilt got a big win this weekend over Kentucky, and that moved them up to the nine line. Still have Florida in barely, still have Alabama in barely. My guess is that I've got six in right now, and I think they'll probably end up with five, possibly four in.
Yeah, we were talking last week about the Crimson Tide. They've had their ups and downs, but overall, how do you like where Alabama and Avery Johnson are?
I think they're on their way up. I don't think they were expected to do good things this year necessarily. It's his first year, but they did really well by scheduling a tough non-conference schedule, which the committee loves that. That's something they want these teams to do. And they got some good out-of-conference wins, and they've got five top 50 wins right now, which that's a nice number to have. But some of the losses they've had are head-scratchers, and the very inconsistent. So you don't know what you're going to get each time with them. They need a couple more wins to feel safe.
Shelby Mast joins us, BracketWag.com, as we go over some bracketology. Selection Sunday just a couple of weeks away in college basketball. Shelby, when you look at the conference tournament, let's say you have a bubble team. Let's say you have a team that's kind of, it can be either in or out, and they make a really good conference run. How much of a leap can they make in their rankings on Selection Sunday?
Well, one thing the committee says is that they don't put any extra emphasis on the tournament games. They look at those basically as an extension of the regular season. So it depends. If you're making a run to the semis or to the finals, who did you beat to get there? If you beat teams that were lower seeded that had some upsets, then that doesn't really do much for you. If you're like Alabama and you beat Kentucky and then Texas A&M, that's good. But if you're beating, say, Mississippi State and Tennessee, that's no big deal. You should win those games.
That's a good point. I think a lot of people kind of overlook those things. It is a quality thing rather than a quantity thing, basically, right? Right.
Exactly. They want you to get good wins, and you know I have fallen into that trap a few times before where I put a little extra emphasis on the tournament games, and the committee will say, no, they're regular games. You know, they will determine an automatic qualifier, but for those teams that don't get in, they just treat them as regular games.
All right, let's get to the Pac-12. How deep is the Pac-12 this year?
Pac-12 is very deep. They've got a legitimate shot to get eight teams in. I've got Oregon and Utah both sitting on the three line, California on the five, and Arizona on the six. And California won't surprise me if they move up to a four. They're playing really well right now. And below that, I've got Colorado. They locked themselves in yesterday, I think. Oregon State, I've got them still on the bubble, but I think in good shape. And sneaking up out of nowhere is Stanford. All of a sudden, they've got a whole bunch of good wins. Their record is somewhat pedestrian at 14-12, but they've played one of the toughest schedules in the country. And they've beat Oregon and Utah, so they've got good wins on their resume. I won't be surprised if they sneak their way in.
Yeah, a lot of conversation about Wisconsin with Greg Gard taking over for Bo Ryan, who goes retired. And then people wondering, okay, now that you've got the gig, you got to try to keep it. Where do you see the Badgers? I see that you got them as a seven. Could they move up a little bit?
Yeah, they possibly could. But I think the important thing is I think they're a lock to be in now, which means they can lose the remaining games they have and still be in. A couple months ago, or even a few weeks ago, I would have said, yeah, no, I don't think they're going to make it. But they have really moved up quite well, got some big wins. It's not just, again, it's not quantity of wins, it's quality of wins. They've had, I know Michigan State, Iowa, and Maryland, that game at Maryland, they just completely dominated Maryland, and that's a very impressive win. But, yeah, they're looking really good right now, and the experience factor for them will play in. They could be a tough out in this tournament.
All right, as far as teams, we already know that if you win the conference tournament, you get them at a lock, and we look at the at-large bids. In a couple of years, the committee has kind of fallen in love with some mid-majors. Are they falling out of the love of the mid-majors, or they're still kind of looking at those teams?
Well, that's the thing about the committee that makes this kind of tough is each year it's different people, and you don't get a good feel. You don't know what they're going to do. I hope they do pick mid-major teams if they don't win their conference tournament. I think the two that have the best chance are Monmouth and Wichita State. Both of them play tough out-of-conference schedules. Wichita State's got a win over Utah, which is looking better and better each day. Monmouth has wins over USC, UCLA, somebody else they beat that's a top 50 team. So they've got some nice wins. Few bad losses, but usually the good outweighs the bad. Another one that could sneak in is Arkansas Little Rock. Of course, they want to be called just Little Rock now, but they've got wins at Tulsa and at San Diego State, which doesn't make a whole lot of people jump up and down, but those are two possible tournament teams, and they were on the road, and Little Rock's record right now is 25-3. That's an impressive record.
And I think the Trojans played statistically the best, they have the best scoring defense in the nation, right, I think?
Yeah, I think they're up there. I don't keep up too much with teams that are doing that because that doesn't factor into what I'm doing, but they're a very, very good team. They're fun to watch.
All right, I know we asked you last week, but it bears repeating for those who are just kind of tuning in for the first time. In terms of the difficulty with the where college basketball is, it's a growing topic. I bring it up almost every night about how teams are just falling. There's no giants. How tough is it this year to put this bracket together?
It's tough. It's really tough, and I get people on Twitter all the time pleading their team's case, and you know, that's well and good. I appreciate their passionate fans of their team, but talking to me is not going to do anything. These teams need to win. There's bubble teams there that are very, very close. They need wins. I get asked that quite a bit. What can my team do? Well, just win. Just win. That's it.
Shelby Mast, again, bracketwag.com. Great talking with you, my friend. Hope to catch up with you again soon.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me, Tony.
All right, coming up, we'll talk some more about the NBA and the effect of the Golden State Warriors, and also take a look at Shelby Mast's bracket and some surprises there from last week, some changes. We'll go over some bracketology. It's Tony D taking you through the night on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Glad you can be with us here on Yahoo Sports Radio. Thanks to Shelby Mast. Bracketwag.com is the website if you want to go to it. He puts out a new potential bracket every single week. You know what scares me? South Carolina is red. And red means bubble and have work left to do. I have 23-6, and the Gamecocks are so unimpressive in lousy SEC play that they're a bubble team. You can't even lock them in. Their conference is so terrible. 15-0 against nobodies, and then pretty much 8-6 in SEC play. Ugh. 23-6 should get you into the tournament, but no, maybe not. You never know. I can't wait for the SEC tournament in Nashville.
He's got my Michigan Wolverines in the Final Four in playing in a play-in game.
Oh yeah, that's right. I was going to ask you about that against Cincinnati.
Right.
Against the Bearcats.
Now, if they beat, I believe they play Iowa on Tuesday or Wednesday. If they get that win, they're firmly in. And then if they go in the Big Ten tournament and get a win or two, they're firmly in the field, in my opinion. Because they'll have 22.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right. Yeah, this bracket stuff is great. I my favorite part of Selection Sunday is the pure bitching and moaning by the powers that be when the brackets come out.
Right.
Just the overall complaining.
Like, no, we were the 64th or 5th.
Yeah, exactly.
8th.
I can't believe it. You cannot live. Tell me that you can leave St. Bonaventure out of the... God, really? Nobody watched him play. I got it. I know. We know. Because everybody... Here's the thing. Everybody finds that one little gem. Like... This is the team no one else is paying attention to, but I know I've been paying attention, and then I can come on national television and tell you that you're completely and utterly incorrect, that everyone else who doesn't even care that a certain small school is being left out, I can toot the horn for that school and make it sound like I really know what I'm doing.
Okay, maybe you can answer this. I mean, yeah. I've been paying attention to college basketball for the most part this year. It's been a lot going on with all the losses and everything. What happened to Gonzaga?
I know, right? That's a great question.
Weren't they ranked to start the season?
They were ranked, and now they've just disappeared.
I mean, they got Wilcher and Sabonis, and the other kid is...
They were ranked, they were highly ranked.
Yeah, I thought so. Like, what happened to them? Like, just completely fall off the...
And I don't have an excuse as to know why. I'm up late. I should be able to watch the West Coast games.
I feel like I've watched them a few times. I remember watching them really
I remember
early.
Watching them earlier yes, this year. I remember they've been on national TV a couple of times earlier this year. But yeah, you're right. Whatever did happen to Gonzaga? That's a great question. Mark Few is not supposed to completely and utterly disappear from my consciousness. I'm supposed to be wondering. I'm still waiting for Gonzaga to make that big Final Four run.
Right, yeah. We've been hearing about it for so long.
Forever. I've said they're no longer Cinderellas anymore. They're no longer the cute team anymore. There's some legit expectations.
Okay, as of November 30th, Gonzaga was ranked 13th.
Okay.
That was as the 30th. They were 4-1 at that time.
Okay.
They were 10 the week before. So they were a top 10 team that is now out of the field. In a bad year. So that's really bad for Mark.
That's really bad.
That team.
That's really bad. That's amazing. Good good bracketology talk. I'm loving the Texas Tech angle to this.
Yeah.
Something I keep talking about. Tubby Smith in Lubbock is doing some pretty good things. That's a tough team. No stars in the Big 12. He doesn't have any big name players. He's got a little scrappy team that is a threat to beat you almost no matter who they play. Good for Tubby Smith.
And we're probably going to get Monmouth in its bench.
I'm excited about that. What about the Chattanooga Mocs out of the SoCon? Where's my Stephen F. Austin this year? Is it Stephen F. Austin?
Yeah, they're in.
Remember
there.
Last year, everyone was talking about how great Stephen F. Austin was? That was the big deal. Like, oh, Stephen F. Austin. Oh, yeah. Who's my Stephen F. Austin this year? Is it Stephen F. Austin?
Could be, yeah. Maybe it's Yale.
Let me tell you something. Here in Nashville, there are two teams people really love in Nashville when it comes to the basketball tournament. Vanderbilt, because they always want you to see Vanderbilt kick in. And then there's Belmont. Belmont getting in all the time because they win their conference and they lead their conference. Vince Gill is a huge Belmont fan and flies to like all of their tournament games. Is probably like a lot of country stars love Belmont basketball. They're good friends with the coach. Program is it's easily accessible. Tickets are cheap. A lot of people love Belmont, but they never do anything. So those are the two teams where I am. I love Little Rock. I they play really good defense and they've got some good marquee wins on their schedule. I just never my problem is that I like these teams, these mid-major teams, but I can't predict anything. Because when you think like, oh, I love UAB, and UAB won a game last year in the tournament. I think they beat Iowa State.
Yes,
in the tournament last year. Remember UAB?
Yep.
I like UAB. Robert Brown is a fantastic player. UAB is a good basketball team. The problem is that no matter how much I fall in love with these schools because they play good defense or they're well coached or they're senior laden, as easily as I can see them beating a Purdue or a or a Texas or in the first round, they could easily lose by 25. And that's been my they're just hard to predict. Because a lot of these teams, like with like a New Mexico State or an Akron or something like that, the teams are that have got some got some good records and got some good things going for them, is that the stage is rather large.
I always just look at the higher ranked team, and if I think they're a team that could lose a game, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I never look at the lower seeded team and be like, yeah, that's this team this year that's going to make a little run to the Sweet 16 or something. I just look at the teams that they're playing and kind of go off that.
Yeah, and I have a tendency to my brackets never get all that crazy. You know, I try to find the 112 over a 5 because
right.
that there's always that. I 99% of the time I get that wrong. Yeah, you know, I always pick the wrong 12. But other than that, I never get too squirrely with my bracket because I just don't trust some of the smaller schools. All right, we'll talk some NFL Combine next hour, Yahoo Sports Radio.